interrupting the current neo-coronial cricketism to bring you Behind the Woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 449. And I always have hesitation. Are those numbers right? Those numbers, that episode number is search engine help, hopefully. Put in that BTWRLM 449 and you'll likely and hopefully get to the broadcast links or something close. Put Behind Woodshed with it, or Real Liberty Media, actually better. And you can then get to the broadcast. Hopefully the vlogcaster has all the links, and you can go back through and see where I started from. It always and certainly, it's just the beginning, just the very, very big touch and top of anything I'm talking about. There's just so much more to talk about and to figure out. And part of that is to give you, again, the background of what you need when we're approaching a lot of these problems. And today I'm going to touch on something I hinted to last week, the terminology that we use, and I'll have to admit, after a while, you start looking at all the words that are the terms. That these are not words like dictionary words in the law, the legal, the codes, the statutes, and all that. The words that are used a lot of times are called terms. They're essentially words all by themselves with a separate meaning. They have a certain context, they have a certain purpose, a subject matter. And partly why they use the word person as a placeholder, even though that's gotten a lot of blown out. And a lot of times I will suggest you don't want to say you're that person in the subject matter. But you just can't say you're not that person in the subject matter. You have to show it doesn't apply, the subject matter doesn't apply. And that's when I started to notice how really this thing starts to wire a lot different and how to start looking around at the terms that are used in the code look like they've taken the entirety of the English language. And so you have to give it due course because if you jump on it, they'll run your ground with it. And I don't chuckle to the point I'm laughing at anybody. I just chuckle at our ignorance. But what's this thing that they've built up around us? And also my observation that I can see now where people, men and women, stand distinct and separate from the government. Then also how we apply that to us and how it gets done and the mistakes that we make and the things we champion and the things we know that are sometimes just not so. Now, I'm not the end-all, be-all about the knowledge. I'm not the end-all, be-all about the terms, and there may be tons that I miss. But this little word came up. I hear people talk about it all the time. And a long time, and I don't want to criticize too much. Let people learn and do their thing. And when it comes to if someone has something to do, I focus in on what possibly, given the record that I notice or the events until that time, I have a suggestion on what might be a possible remedy or relief for whatever is ailing them. On some points, there's just nothing I can do. As I've told you, people come to me, want to do tax matters. They want to take the COVID money. And then they're astonished that the IRS came and took their pension. I don't know about that. You can't do that. And then deny you're not a taxpayer. That kind of thing. I can't really help. But there's some things I can say that we might be able to understand before we get in, and we should, as best we can. And these little terms are tucked away here and there. One of the terms I hear all the time people use, and it's partly, again, street language between you and me, we can use these words. When you get into the so-called legal or law areas, whether that's equity or law or whatever that is, you better pay attention to what you're saying. So understand that there's always this slip that goes on, and it's okay on the street, but it's not okay when you're getting into these so-called legal matters. But what I talk about is understanding what the battlefield is to avoid the battlefield, hopefully. One of the things you don't want to do is you don't want to start using language that's not really yours to use. And yes, that's right. The government has essentially a copyright on language. And whatever a word is in the statutes, it's defined there, and that's how it's going to be used in that jurisdiction. That's why I've said the better and easier thing when you can is to avoid the jurisdiction. And one of the places you can find it is in these I've been doing the road law in my criminal complaint here, but the road law, the disposal laws, which is to your patents as well. There's language in there, and there's language, I'll use the word appurtenant to that patent language, that are grounded in grant law. And Beth Z will tell you it's all about contract law in the RLM chat that she did this morning, and that's true. but it's not going into the jurisdiction on the contract and having them decide it. It's in fact saying you can't touch this contract. Everybody's a third party trespasser to it. And a pertinent that grant is grant law and contract law and statuses which attach because of the nature of way this republic was wired that I think everybody seems to miss. And it's partly what guides and informs me on what language I need to use, and I am never satisfied that I know enough, and I'm looking for whether words pop up that I shouldn't be using and have to alter. What I have found is when I stay inside grant law terms, it's like non-touchable. And as long as I don't use the other word that's in the jurisdiction of regulation, my position has always been a lot stronger. Whether or not a judiciary wants, or a judge or a cop wants to recognize that, I can't stop that criminal at the point he wants to rob the bank, notwithstanding the law against it, right? I mean, this is our problem, part of our problem. And not enough of us stand up in unity with the basics about what's going on and the fact that we really are immune from that until we have done something that is regulable. And that requires our consent. But let me get to this one word. I hear the people talking about, and in part, again, on the street, I could care less about you saying this. When we get into documentation, you'll never, ever hear me use this term. And the term is travel. You'll never hear me say I have a right to travel. And forget the drive. That's all so far, far removed from my thoughts. Because I found out a long time ago, and in fact, it came up with a friend of mine, the guy who got me into doing this decades and decades ago. We were talking about something, and he's on a situation where he's using the paperwork I put together relative to this grant side. And that this word travel came up, and he reminded me. And that's why I wanted to tell you. So much in the memory hole sits there. Things I've known and just don't use no more because it's terms that it's not in the jurisdiction I want to, I am protected by. At least I think I am. And to this point, at least there's a neutralization of the oppression. And the word travel pops up in the black and white, in the federal code. And this is serious because that's national. And so I'm going to touch on something here to show you why, at least why, where a word is in the statute, I don't use it. And I'll find some other. But that when I started from the grant law, the words that are relative to grant law and trusts and trustees and beneficiaries and all the obligations and duties brought in through the organic establishment with these admissions acts or enabling acts for states started to show me the narrow path. And when I use that language, there's no language in the statutes that touches it. They'll mention it, but they don't touch it as an authority. But the word travel, people might be astonished at this. Why you don't use the word travel? You don't use the word right to travel. It's just, it's been co-opted, but people use it. And I found out it's not what you need. And so let me just turn quickly. We'll get to the point here. So 42 U.S.C. Code Section 2000A, Prohibition Against Discrimination or Segregation in Places of Public Accommodation. Fascinating, we're talking in COVID about this discrimination thing. It's fascinating how we have to all be now disabled in order to use these things. But the point is, the federal law or even a state statute that defines a term, that's what you have to use first. And then you have to use it in context and for purpose. And if the context and purpose fails, or the word doesn't seem to apply because Congress can write bad laws, legislators can make bad laws, they can make it unconstitutional. We're going to touch that relative to these COVID regulations in one state. And those terms are guiding right there until they're shown to be outside of the use. Or they're not defined at all, and then the court will go to a dictionary. They don't go to necessarily Blacks or Bouviers or anything general like what people do on the street. They have in the state, and you should find, every state determines which dictionary they will go to. A lot of the states I've seen, or some of the states I should say, use the 1828, I think it's the Webster's, Merriam-Webster's dictionary. That's the one they go to. And so that's the one you have to go to as well when the word falls outside the statute. But in this case, the word travel has been defined in federal law. Federal municipal law, no less. This is the same thing they beat everybody up with. Remember, Title 42, Section 1981, just short of 2000A, gives you your civil rights, the rights you gave, the rights to extortion, exactions of every kind and to no other. This is that section. And so you got to be careful when you think about what we're dealing with in here and how it really works. It seems to be inverted in its application. Let me read a little bit of this. It's equal access. All persons shall be entitled to full and equal enjoyment of goods, services, facilities, privileges, advantages, and accommodations of any place of public accommodation as defined in this section, without discrimination or segregation on the ground of race, color, religion, and or national origin, period. Nothing else, folks. That's the other limitation here. But let's go down. I'm just going to get right to the cut to the chase. You can get the link to. I use Cornell. I'm just reading right from the Cornell website, 42 USC 2000A. Then we turn down, roll down to about C here, operations affecting commerce. Criteria, commerce, in quotes, commerce defined. You go down a little further and you read, for the purpose of this section, the term commerce, quote, commerce, means travel. Now I'm pausing. I'm going to pause a long time here. I want you to hear this. Commerce means travel. And then it goes on. It means trade, traffic, commerce, the word itself, commerce, transportation, or communication among the several states, or between the District of Columbia and any state, or between any foreign country, or any territory or possession and any state or the District of Columbia, or between points in the same state, but through any other state or the District of Columbia or a foreign country. Commerce, in this section, means travel. You do not have a right to travel. You have a right relative to five or so elements to be accommodated. That's totally different than a right. So, I left it a long time ago, but it bothers me, I guess, a little bit, but it's a bit of a chuckle why the term is defined, and yet I see here lots of people saying they have the right to travel. Well, you might have the right to commerce in a sense, but not relative to the regulation authority. Commerce means travel. We don't have a right to travel, folks. What do we have? And when I get into disposal law, so I won't leave you hanging, I should leave you hanging because I want you all to study this stuff. It's not that hard. Yes, it's all over the place and they didn't do a good job keeping us, allowing us to keep track like a dog on the hunt. And that's why it helps when we have a lot of people looking in different areas and they're all bringing up their objective analysis so everyone can see it instead of everybody putting what they think they know what's going on. Just look at the words. We just use them. I just take it for granted. They're used. They're defined. They're copywritten. Now what does that leave me? And by having that opinion, I've been a lot better positioned and been able to position myself and those around me and, again, our properties a lot better. And so when we saw this years and years ago, that commerce was defined as travel. And I get to the offside. You'll find that the word vessel is your body. So vessel being your body has been defined too. And so this starts to create a real question. I don't want to get too lost in all the how to keep those straight. However, I stopped using right to travel a long time ago. This definition and the awareness of another term in grant law was allowed it me to move, I almost said it, Vince, move into the better term, which is consistent with grant side law. Obligations of government to you to secure you in, not to secure you by. And we don't use the right to travel. Just go read it. You'll just see this. Stop trying to use all these words you think you know. If there's a word used as a definition and it's in the statute and it's used a particular way, just adopt that. Stop using the word. Move on and find it. It's telling you to move on. Go find the better term. What's the term? Relative to travel, we're talking about grant law. We're actually talking about what? We're talking about property. Grant disposal law is about a property. When you get that on the ground, you put that physically, you want to be on the land? Yeah. Now we put it on the soil. That's where your enabling acts, your admissions acts speak to. We put that disposal law on the land. That's where the land is. You want to be a man on the land? You want to be on this stuff? You find out where that is in your state. You find out where it talks about the authority and where the authority is in those things that are disposed from federal holdings. It's a little bit harder on the East Coast to do because they came in as colony states and all that stuff is just written right in the law and is accepted. Your rights of this term within that obligation to the government is in there. You have to go search out the antecedent authorities that incorporated that. That's a little bit tougher thing for the East Coast. and I say that generally, maybe all the way out to Missouri. Missouri, as we're going to get to this court case, fascinating court case just popped up a couple days ago. So, travel. We don't have a right to travel. That's a commerce mode. That means commerce. You might just change the word. Travel means commerce. When you say you have a right to travel, you're saying before a federal judiciary or a state that has to honor the federal Title 49 overarching transportation authority, when you say the right to travel, you're trying to claim that you have the right to commerce. And they're going to laugh and they're going to say, yeah, but you're not relative to this charge that you've been, that we've attached to you, that you haven't avoided. And so the right to travel is the right to commerce is not a right. Now, you have a right to a livelihood. That's a different word, isn't it? You won't see livelihood in that. And now we start to get to this terminological shift when we start moving into what was the antecedent rights of men and women and what was brought on and being brought into vogue, if you will, even with the legislatures or the newfangled sustainable nonsense. And it's how I quickly identify whether someone is really talking within the grant. And this is all limited by what I don't know. So I say, I'm challenging anybody. If you know better, do you need to tell me? Because I talk the way I've found is the way you talk relative to the limited narrow path. And if there's a way to move it over, to widen it a little bit, that's great. I need to know that. Or if we have to shrink it down, then I'm willing to do that. I can walk a tightrope almost, folks. And I'm not, my last name ain't Walenda, is it? No, we don't use travel because it's defined in federal law, an overarching authority through the 14th Amendment upon the states to a commerce word, the word commerce itself. And so what is the word under grant law for the right, if you will, to move about the country, if you will, to move about from the property disposed on by patent or disposed by accepting the grant of the construction of the highways, as you can read in the 1866 Load Law, Section 8. Very short sentence and a very powerful grant. It's the right to construct the highways in the people. And it happened to be to the miners, since they're the ones that ran all over the country needing these roads to get there back, and the government had to give them a what? What came appurtenant the property that they had? Not the right to travel. It was to do what relative to law of the land or the soil? What's the term? Now, I know someone in the RLM track, he used it this morning. He already knows it. He didn't even use the word travel. He's doing a lot of things that maybe he doesn't need to do relative to remedies, but he knows not to use the term. So I know some of you are listening. So what is that? You don't have the right to travel because that's commerce. Relative to a land disposal, what do you have appurtenant, the patent or the disposal? Would be the right to get there and get back, and it has a technical term called the right of ingress and egress. So I got all those of you that said that before got the fist pumping going on. Congratulations. The right of ingress and egress. All right, you don't think that's a lot, but it's not commerce, is it? You didn't hear that defined in there. And yet it's a term. The full word, ingress and egress, is a term. And it's applicable, I've found, in only to disposed land and the places where you have appurtenant rights to get to and from. Why? And you also know, in no place in the United States of America, and likely anywhere the rule of law and democracy brand of injustice rules at this point, nowhere can you landlock a land. There is always a right of ingress and egress to every land. And a long time ago, I told you, even renters have this, if you understand how to go back through the patent. And you show you have a pertinent that your rent, your contract with your landowner, you have their right, if they can, and you have to find the assignee status they are, whether they know it or not, that you have the pertinent right to ingress and egress to what you rent. Better shown to people that just have the land that they can show is theirs by assignment. I don't know of anybody, I've never found an heir to a patent yet that could exist out there in the world, but I haven't seen it. Most everybody's an assignee. And that's for what? Forever. So, I think I've beat this up enough. You understand the word travel is defined in federal law applicable to the states as commerce. It's a sleight of hand. You saw the other words in there as well. Transportation is commerce. What does Congress have the exclusive right to regulate amongst the states? Commerce. What did the, I think, 1942 wheat case? I can't remember the guy's name. I think it starts with an F. He got the wheat farmer with disposed land. This was a bad case, actually. What did the Supreme Court there say? It says, his using his own wheat and not selling in the neighborhood affected commerce across the nation. Totally bogus decision. However, there it is. And so, the proper statement for that case would have been to assert that the Congress, the judiciary, had no jurisdiction over the patent that the farmer was using to grow his wheat, because they don't. And I've told you that you can look around, you'll find states that actually tell that. The judges have no jurisdiction to interfere with the patent. That means they have no jurisdiction. There is the definition of what I've been telling you for over a decade. You're not in the fight. There is no place to go. There's no court to fight. You're outside, and they are third-party trespassers on your grant and the contract of that and the obligation of the government to protect that in you against all others, even the government itself. And this is all in the mining law. Get over to JMDJeffersonMoneyDistrict.com. There's some links to go find stuff about this. It's all written down. It's those documents are things I put together as I was coming up to this point back in 2007 or something. Finally putting it together, what was going on. We don't have a right to travel, but we have a right to ingress and egress. Now we have a right, there's also and you'll see this in the Highways and Trails document at JeffersonMiningDistrict.com, you have the right to get to places in between. It has nothing to do with travel. Although on the street, we would say you have the right to travel. Travelers were all right. But see, this is what they've gone on. The legislature and the judiciary, by common law, see, that's the problem with common law. They now, courts can make common law. How they can do that, actually, I don't know, because they're not, you'll hear the Missouri case coming up. They're not supposed to make law. They're supposed to just determine the law. And they don't have jurisdiction over things that they don't have interest in, or can't be shown an interest in. They're not supposed, that's why they can't interfere with the privity of a patent to either the grantee, the assignee, or the heir. Forever. And so, getting back home. This word travel. You don't have a right to. It's commerce. You may have a right to go through to commerce, but you have to do the regulation side. What I've been talking about is disposal law, so grant law, soil, land stuff. But you look inside the terminology of that, what you have there is the right of ingress and egress. Have I beat this up enough? That when you hear about this and why people are getting beat down in the streets, part of it is the lack of training in the cops. But when I've found even when you bring the proper terminology, they still are ignorant, but it doesn't go much further once you file the right collateral attack against what they've done. So far, all we get is neutralization. That just shows you how corrupt the judiciaries are. I don't know about fighting that, and I can't do it on my own. What would help is if lots more people start to look more at the terminology, come from the land itself, not say I'm a man of the land, show that's where the authorities are. And then proceed with that en masse. So, I just wanted to point out all these terms. They have a thing. Everyone gets they shrug their shoulder. They throw their hands up in despair. And it's really, once you see, my despair is that there's not more people understanding the narrow path I see that literally chops the hands and arms off of anybody that comes in, but for that corruption, which was for the people to stop underneath, I think all constitutions I've seen, it's the right of the all people to alter and abolish. And we looked at Virginia's constitution, which is a colonial state, and it says for maladministration, I'll take it. For any maladministration. And so all we have to do in mass is find the maladministration. And the Virginia's gun thing, I was really, really close. I was really kind of excited there for a little while. So, because it was getting into the antecedent things, the things the governments have to honor. It's how they were pulled together. Again, these enabling acts are an obligation on the government. And you have a right of pertinent disposal. The disposal to the highway is to everyone. And there's statutes I've found in states that allow it. In Oregon, we have one. It's where you go look at it. You'll see it in the document at Jefferson Mining District. I believe in the Highways and Trails document. There's a statutory acceptance that happened in Oregon law. Not statute, but Oregon law. In around 1902, I think. My memory's not perfect on this. Could be 1901. That's a statutory acceptance. It's not reflected in the statutes, in the overthrow, but it's there and active. And the statutory acceptance is recognized by the courts. And it's how the state accepted the grant of the highways. And then you go to your road law, at least in Oregon, and you see the ORS 368. And you go down to 1.131. And you're going to look in the fine print, and it says that the authority given exclusively to the county court over all disposed roads, not to the judiciary, over to the county, over all disposed roads to the county, cannot interfere with the rights of the grant, United States grantees, those that accept the grant. And if you don't put that connection together as all-powerful, notwithstanding the criminals that won't recognize it, I don't know what to say. It's not through the Motor Vehicle Code. You don't have a right to drive. You don't have a right to travel. That's all commerce. That's all regulated. What they don't do is they can't regulate their, they can't come contrary and interfere with the grant they gave, which has requires an ingress and egress to the property. Anyway, so just part of me just wonders why we've been having such a problem, and it's all right here. But we got to read a lot, and I've read a lot. I've had a lot of people read to me. We had a long time ago. We people different. We all have a different interest. Did you know this? Did you know that? We talk amongst each other. Not that we knew so much. It was mostly like, did you know? And when we didn't know, we said, oh wow, we better take cognizance of what's going on here. And that starts to also instruct and inform us on what we might do. More importantly for me, it instructed me to start looking at remedies, how to look at the remedy. In this case, it's all in the equity, not at law. We're not suing for injury to us. We're suing to stop an invasion of the property we have and have right to. And like let's show you, though, as a miner, as a mineral estate grantee, we have absolute right to use roads. In fact, the Constitution protects mine haul roads. I call them mine haul roads. They're haul roads for agriculture or mines. That's constitutionally protected. You think that's powerful? No, we've got judges and cops that don't care about all that. I got that. But that sits there for us to use, and I use it all the time. That is a grant in the, protected by the Constitution. Then we look at the statute, and we see the same protection, that not even the county courts give an exclusive jurisdiction over your disposed highways, all the way down to the trail, no less, is in the county court, not the Forest Service, not the BLM, not the federal government, not the federal judiciary, not even the state judiciary. It sits in the state that I'm sitting in the county court. And then there's due process that has to happen before they can mess with any of these disposed lands. This is some high-level obligation going on. So I never talk about the right to travel. That's in commerce. I never talk about the right to drive. That's in commerce. What I do speak to is the appurtenant right of ingress and egress of the property that was disposed to us against all comers, against every intrusion, which can never be taken away. They can't take away your access to your property. No jurisdiction has that power. And so, understand the language. Understand it's tedious, but understand that, and you're going to do a whole lot better. You're not going to make these simple mistakes. You're going to be preparing things ahead of time. You're not going to be submitting yourself to abuse. That the abuse happens is going to happen because we haven't trained, if you will, the officials to follow the law. COVID, I told you, COVID was the definition. It's the pinnacle of that failure. Now, I still hear crickets on all this. Anyway, so I don't know why I've gotten quite so long on this. It's important. Understand. Just go ahead and just don't worry about taking all these words out of your vocabulary. What I'm telling you is that when you focus into the right space, you'll notice the words in the right space aren't used in the statutes or the codes. They are used as acceptances in the law and obligations, and they're untouchable ultimately. Is this a silver bullet? Well, you know it's not. I just told you, I have some people that were using this. We either stalemate the government or else they don't. Well, they stalemate. All those are stalemated. Nothing is really moving on anymore. This is, you're just now highlighting the corruption. And my sense was, and I didn't know what anything else, if we could get thousands and thousands of people, locally, if thousands of people to see this problem and see that it's not functioning government, it's dysfunctional government, it's maladministered government, that maybe the tide would start to turn. If that's going to happen, we have a long way to go. So my little contribution today would be to say, there's lots of words that are, if you will, copywritten by the government. You can't use them. When you use them, no matter what you say, they just understand that that's in their jurisdiction. This is partly why the cops start doing what they do. They've been told, and the judges too, you sovereign citizens, they're being trained about, this has been going on, training cops and judges for sovereign citizens going on at least since the 2003 or something, if I remember right. They were just showing what everybody was filing and how it was wrong. They figured everybody out, and they start beating on them again. They started denying people. They start tolerating you more. There was all planned, written, if you just go find it, how to deal with people that weren't not really on the right point. But they didn't want to really tick off the natives, and they wanted to make an appearance of the appearance of judicial propriety. And so when I stopped using all those terms, which was really, really fast, when I watched people get taken down for using certain things and I moved into other things and I was being nudged into the right direction, we started using better terms. It came out better and we had more foundation to move against these people, which then stops it. If we don't stop it immediately, we can then shut down their criminality, whether or not we get total relief. And this is a different problem. So a lot of talking here. I hope people are listening. Really got to read a lot to see. It's tedious. A lot of people won't do it, but this is where they got us because they knew that people wouldn't do it. It's like COVID. They knew people would not step up in the right way. That everyone would, they've exploited a ton of weaknesses in people, just as I understood, and maybe why I'm so adamant about pushing this and keep pushing it to let people know they're exploiting your weaknesses, whether you want to admit to them or not, and they actually planned your non-response to that as well. It's really amazing. And that one is what? That document, one of the documents I put in the bottom of the blogcaster so you could go read it, which is the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. And then you also look over there, the Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. So they've got this governmental circuit built up. And they'll plug you right in. You'll plug yourself in, actually. They'll offer the place and you'll plug yourself into the circuit they control. Then you'll think you have rights. And I figured out, well, if I don't plug myself into the circuit and don't let them, then maybe their circuit is short-circuited, isn't it? Isn't it just or open? It doesn't function. Again, not a silver bullet, but it certainly means, it shows, if you just think about an electrical circuit, if I don't put myself in as the resistor, then that circuit can't work as planned. If I don't jump in, the circuit is open. When I jump in, I complete the circuit. My view on this was just don't jump in. And then you fight the one, show that they're improperly trying to get you, shove you into the circuit. Anyway, so that's just a bunch of street language. There's certain tools in law, and it's really in equity, where you are a provided supposedly remedy, and this is the supposed because it's neutralizing. That's what I'm saying. It's neutralizing and not giving complete justice. That is a different problem, but it's there to put forward immediately is what I would call your avoidances, your pre-plea remedy and avoidance when they attack you, or where they attack you, like I'm writing and have been quite a few months now, the criminal complaint against the Forest Service coming against our mining claim. And it more and more and more comes up, and the problem is it's more and more words, it's more writing and more understanding, and I'll tell you, I've been learning a little bit more as we move along relative to a terminology. I just found out something I hadn't given much thought to. The word negligence I thought was pretty high-sounding, pretty bad. I thought I could prove it, and it was maybe the pinnacle of what we could argue. And then I found out something about official misconduct, which I equated to negligence. And in fact, it's not. It's like a major step up. And I just found that out. So if you think I know it all, no, I'm learning all the time. I'm learning how to put this stuff together. As I work with it, more realization comes. It's really the problem is we should have never been a society that lost what I'm now trying to fight hard. The fight is me trying to gain my knowledge in order to apply it. Something we should have never lost as a society. And so this is the hard work that's the learning curve for us. Not thinking we know so much, figuring out all of it that we don't know, then working it enough to say, oh, we have a different way to work with it. So we're going to talk about travel. We're going to talk about it's not, it's controlled. And I told you a long time ago, you're going to have to put laws in place that gives you the right to do certain things. Well, it's interesting. There's a new law is coming out or being offered. On the 20th anniversary of the creation of the Transportation Security Administration, the Freedom to Travel Act of 2021, H.R. 630, quote, to protect the right to travel by common carrier, close quote, has been introduced in the United States House, represented by Republican Paul Gosar, a Republican of Arizona, and referred to the Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure and the Committee on Homeland Security. Now, it gives you certain rights. Remember now, let's go freedom. Freedom is the range of motion within a frame of constraint. Don't ever forget that one. And to travel is commerce. Freedom to Commerce Act of 2021, introduced in Congress, as I'm reading it from paperspleased.org, there's an actual law that says you have the freedom to travel. Like, okay, what happened to the right of ingress and egress? They don't talk about it. They always regulate commerce, though, don't they? Now, they go on to say in this article what they're going to allow. And understand, if you look closely, the 4 points they mention here, and I'm not going to read the act, I'm just going to give it to you. You go to go do and see. This is like comparison stuff for me. I look around, is this consistent? Yeah, it's all looking pretty consistent with over there. It's not encroaching with over here. I'm still cool. I'm still good. And right now, the local fight is just getting the mining claim back, let alone trying to get out of the state. So I'm not worried about it. Get out of the country. I'm not worried about all that. I'm never going anywhere. I don't think. Kind of didn't plan that I would either, because if they saw this stuff coming down, it wasn't going to be much. They went and done it in 2011, didn't they? And then they went and done it again in Operation Hindsight 2020, just as I told you. Freedom to travel. Well, who would have thunk you'd have the right to have an act to give you the freedom to travel? But I want you to understand the jurisdictional authorities. This isn't commerce. This is not the right to travel that people think they have the right to move about. As I saw one word, locomotive. I got rid of all those terms, the locomotion. Just, yes, it's all there to say, but it's really more you get into the property, disposed land, the disposed highway, the highway disposed to highway, the soil disposed to highway, and that comes with the pertinent rights and obligations of the government, not you. And so I went that way, all I can say. How you affect that is how do you understand your remedies, and I would say focusing on equity. Again, no silver bullets, as we found out in the Tennessee case, but I think this is a rolling embarrassment. It's building in Tennessee, and I'm just hoping that maybe enough, especially with this misery case that just came out, enough will come out to show we were right. The people are right that read the law, understand what's going on, and hold the officials to the black and white that was required to be held, and keep them out of the areas that they're never supposed to be in, and understanding that. Not because we know so much, because there's an authority that predates us. It has nothing to do with what we think. They're saying that the TSA is going to have some restraints put on it. There's one situation here that says they still get to check you for explosives. So I don't know how that translates out. To me, this looks like make-work political law. Why would you have a freedom to travel? I understand the title means nothing anyway, but it is instructive on where they're going. And they do reference travel by common carrier. What do we say? Commerce by commerce carrier, right? And so they're telling you what the jurisdiction is. You don't want to be there. And there's another problem about this, and right now I can't address using someone else or some other common carrier who is regulated to move a law about the country. I'm still trying to get it so I can move locally. Yeah, most people are, and yet I see bunches of examples of people not quite understanding and doing it wrong, get behind the eight ball, if you will, not ahead of it. And part of it is using the wrong language, and you see this came up this morning. It came up after I set up a tab. Well, look, they're even talking about freedom. The constraint within the frame of commerce, you have the right, this freedom to travel, which is all still subject to other limitations. Is not being free, folks. The inability of the government to intrude upon the ingress and egress, that's pretty much free. That's just showing you criminals right off the bat. Biden's now on travel. You got to have a functioning system to make that common carrier. We have a little bit of news from last week. You may have heard about this. I thought it was kind of interesting. Again, the answer, non-answer. The politics instead of actual doing of the proper work of the government to help the people. Biden's release of oil from the Strategic Reserve, what you need to know. During the busy travel week of Thanksgiving amid the unusual big price spike for gasoline, well, that's just, what is it? That's just exploitation, right? Right before Thanksgiving, everyone's going to travel, the price goes up. Why didn't they stop that? No, they're not going to do that. President Joe Biden invoked one of the rarely used powers of his office, ordering the release of millions of barrels of crude oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Well, that seems to be, to me, to admit to a failure of some sort, first of all. But from the Strategic Oil Reserve, my mind kind of went back into decades ago when we heard about that before, and the Persian Gulf, when President George Bush did it. They talked about that, Katrina, all this stuff that they talk about going into the global reserve, and they're using it instead of using it for war. It's a national security. See, this is what I'm saying. This shows it's a failure. Normally, it was for it to be a reserve for the military to use when we're going to go defend ourselves, and we turned into an attacking force, so that's where it kind of moved. But this is supposed to be in reserve for our military to protect us. It's I was wondering, I couldn't remember the size of it now. But so this is the next part of information. But he's using it instead. See, the price, and you the people getting really, really upset till you start doing something about it, they need to avoid. So he's going to throw out this seed, this drop, literally in a barrel of oil, relative to the use. And he's going to throw out what they say is a 50 million barrel allotment release from the strategic reserve. And so I wondered, well, how much would that be? What is that relative to the use? And I was thinking, I didn't know if I was thinking global or United States, but it ended up being that my mind was thinking the global use, the number I was thinking about. And I laughed out loud, 50 million barrels. Most of you should laugh out loud, but it wasn't quite so outlandish. Getting over to the strategic oil reserve, we get to some numbers. And then you can get on EnergyGov to see it. I'll give you the link. You can come see what it is. You can see this is a political, not a functional answer. It essentially goes nowhere. How do we know that? Well, the United States itself uses 18.2 million barrels of oil a day. I can't even fathom these numbers, folks, but that's what we all use, 18.2 million barrels. I don't know how Greta's going to solve that with her green windmills, but anyway, moving over to this again, 18.2 million barrels a day. 50 million barrels would last us 2.759 days, 2.8 days, not even 3 days. And it gets worse. When you get to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve discussion of what it is and what they can do, all they can release is 4.4 million. Their infrastructure could only release 4.4 million a day. We're using 18.2. How is that a functional release, a functional measure, is really the tale of government anymore? Oh, we're going to be able to use 4.4 million barrels a day for about 144 days. It's only 24% of the need, they claim, if they can get it to us. And it doesn't start going until 13 days after they actually do it. And they're doing it to lower the price. How much do you think that's going to lower the price? Historically, I've got two links you can read about it. The best over time is maybe 20 cents. Most likely less than a dime. Was the big Thanksgiving present that Biden did to solve a problem that what? He caused. Remember, they're cutting off the pipelines. Greta is winning the day. The Russians are sending their diesel over, because it's not just the oil we need the distillates. This is a major, major failure in this country and people, the people in the government. Anyway, this 50 million was a joke. I thought it was. I track it out. It's even more of a joke than I thought, and it's not funny. If they gave it out at 50 million barrels at the time that we needed it, it would only last us 3 days, folks. So just figure that out. Before Thanksgiving was over the weekend, we were done. Your prices are skyrocketing again, just as planned. The inflation, they want to talk about this stuff. It's all been set up to drive these prices up. They have to actually give the petrodollar some relevance as well, make you think that they're going to get some energy. But that's actually still stabilizing the world. The other countries gave their little pittance to the system, too. Now we go to the globe. The globe uses, the whole world uses over 100 million, just short over 100 million barrels a day. 100 million. What was offered, the government's offered, is not a drop in a barrel of oil compared to what we actually use. I still want to see Greta figure out how we're going to supply this kind of energy to people. But you see, this is austerity. This is high prices. They're attacking the very thing that they're now releasing. It's really quite a dynamic, and I don't know what, this is almost an esoteric view, because people don't really appreciate the attack that's going on right in their face, and the admissions of defeat, or really, it could be considered a conquest, in another view, like the view I would take, against the people, and not responding. and I'm not the only one that sees this, certainly. President Biden's latest oil directives lead to nowhere very fast. Again, you can read it if you haven't saw it. I think it's important to understand the political versus the functional government. And everything climate change, everything COVID, everything the commerce essentially now has become the weapon. And part of that is the fiat dollars based on this petrol stuff, part of it. And that's another problem for us. And then it's also our problem because we have the right to solve it. All the law sits there to say, don't do what they're doing, otherwise you come to ruin. And the people say, well, we're going to go that way anyway, instead of saying, well, you go that way, you financial markets. We're going to go back to the land. We're going to go back to the substance. We're going to operate a little bit slower than all this fraud being monetized. And this, if I ever get to the very end of this story, you're going to see the very end. What I was telling you is now written on the books, coming on. As the political answer moves and the bureaucrats are taking control, where they have literally no authority, we see this bureaucrat's false promise, take two COVID shots and we will reopen. Again, not a functional answer, but a political answer. And the politics is essentially war, right? This is when you start getting into what politics is in nations. Politics is war. It's not functional government. It's not the way the Republic was made, for sure. And apparently, I guess on the side note, if they co-opt the entire language, I guess they have us, don't they? And yet, there's that little bitty narrow path I keep talking about. There's language they don't use. They just will not use it. And I said, good, good, that's where I'm going to go. And I have to support it. I'm not just saying it. You just don't say I have the right of ingress and egress. You will have to have how the antecedent authorities build. It's maybe up to 6-7 steps. And then hopefully you can find in your state statutes the acknowledgement of that upon the government to leave you alone. Now you're coming better, and then you have to apply that to a remedy. And I've just said that, and my mind's going, well, everyone's going to shrug their shoulders and throw up their hands and say it's too much. And that's right. That's what they got us in. We're saying too much, and look what they've done to all of us. Well, most of us, I suppose. But bureaucrats false promise. See, it was never, I'm going to show you here in this Missouri case coming right up, misery case. But what's coming up here, folks? The bureaucrats were never to have this kind of authority and power to decide, to promise. And this is coming from Mish, and I will have to say, caveat, I don't know if this guy agrees with vaccines or not, or whether he thinks they're good or bad. He does make some decent observations. The last paragraph is really what you need to read in this article, ultimately. Starts it out at the top is a good one, and then to the end. In the middle, I'm not so sure. But he points out that bureaucrats are promises, promises, promises. It's a political end. It's war, essentially, on you by political means under color of authority, all fraud. And they get you to capitulate your positions. And most importantly, when you don't respond. They want you to fret on the wrong answers, but they also don't want you to work on the right answers. Which I said in the chat room was, why don't, they're talking about people protesting around the world. Great. Okay. I'm not opposed to that, but heck, folks, why don't you go find your law that said they were supposed to find the infectious agent, demand that of your local health official when they don't throw them in jail instead of just protesting. You think 10,000 people could get that job done, folks? I think so. I really do think so. And I don't mean like all violent, though. Yeah, you might have to man or woman handle somebody to get them in the jail. They may not want to go like any other criminal. But you have the basis for why they have breached the legislature's commands on following a procedure, strictly following to that procedure. But we don't get into the idea of promises. We don't get into the idea of mandates that don't have a delegation of authority and that can't be given a delegation of authority. So I appreciated what Mish was saying, at least in sentiment, and at the very end, he does lay out the ongoing problems. Again, nobody steps up to demand that infectious agent. As I've talked to you before, it was always in the documentation, the what they called the test did not exist. And all you had to do is just read the documentation, and you'd find out, hey, there's just no test here. What they're doing is not a test. Then you find out that they can't have a test. And so there it was. And I identified that on March 8th, a week before the COVID mandate started to come in, the emergencies. Okay, so the point is, there's no excuse on us to be doing anything that we've been watching. There's no promise that can be made. And let me get over to the really important point where I don't have a really problem with. I do have two problems with this court case. But it's great to watch something come out. And I don't, again, this is the first circuit court case. It was out of Cole County, Missouri, from Judge Daniel R. Green, discussing, of all things, the bureaucratic authority or lack of it within the COVID mandates. And they use the DHS, they go through the DHSS in Missouri, and they then assign authorities by regulation to lesser officials to do the other orders. This judge came in and just eviscerates the entirety. And guess what? He actually refers to, this is why I started to appreciate it, because this is where I come from. It may sound patriotic or whatever, or trite, when you say the Republican form of representative government. Folks, relative to governmental obligations and land disposal, that is a thing. You have to have that structure, that establishment, or it all falls apart. That's how fast it is to figure it out. And this judge hits that. Judge R. Green, presiding, has issued a sweeping judgment against COVID restrictions and mandates imposed by the Department of Health and Senior Services, November 22, 2021. Cole County is located in the center of the state, and its largest city is Jefferson City, the state capital. The decision begins, and I don't know, maybe I should read a little bit, but I have the case, but let me read this. The decision begins, this case is about whether Missouri's Department of, I know some of you are going to get upset about that. You think it's a beautiful place to live. I've had a lot of friends that moved there, so it must be something. I just get a chuckle out of saying Missouri, like all the other places that we suffer this stuff instead of living in the grandness that this place had to offer, actually. This case is about whether Missouri's Department of Health, you've been living in misery under these health officials. Anyway, senior services regulations can abolish representative government in the creation of public health laws and whether it can authorize closure of schools or assembly based on the unfettered opinion of an unelected official. The court finds it cannot. Do we need really to hear more? Yes, we do, because we need to understand how far away we were. 2 years out of this thing, this should have been the first court case and the last court case that determined this. But what's interesting about this case is it's talking strictly, apparently, on regulation side. And what I was really interested in is what this judge does relative to this delegated power, because the very next thing they talk about and what's quoted out of the case is what David Tulis put in his complaint was the violation, the breach to the separation of powers of the organic establishment. And the very conversation quoted in this article says this, in quote, separation of powers among the three branches of government, legislative, administrative, and judicial, is fundamental to the preservation of liberty. DHSS, this is an agency now, a department they call it. It's an agency of the executive. DHSS regulation break our three-branch system of government in ways that a middle school civic student would recognize, because they place the creation of order of laws and enforcement of those laws into the hands of an unelected administrative official. It goes on to say, as repeated in the article here, the state delegated rulemaking power to an administrative agency, and the administrative agency has in sum delegated broad rulemaking power to an unelected administrative official. This type of double delegation, which results in lawmaking by administrative entity, is an impermissible combination of legislative and administrative power. And anyway, I read this stuff and it's like, well, where has this guy been? Where has all the judges been? I want to bring it up again. In the case that's such an appeal in Tennessee, we put in the breach of separation of powers. We put in I offered it as a poison pill for the mootness question that we were potentially facing, that we would put in what I showed as an equity relief in a chancery jurisdiction called reformation, where the court looks at the rule that you cite being violative, and the court determines what would make that rule proper. In other words, this case, the rule that I found, and again, this was a quick review, and I threw it in And I figured we'd open the door with this very question with that, and then the breach of separation of powers fact, allegation and assertion. We would open the door to this very case here in Misery. The reformation of the rule that allowed the definition for appropriate medical expert to be a foreigner, the CDC, outside the WHO, and all this other stuff. When the legislative intent, the lawmaker, strictly stated that it had to be locally derived from a local incident started by a medical report, proving what I've been telling you about your communicable disease laws and what the legislature said the executive must follow. This court case is about not just that violation, but that when they handed the authority, the legislature handed it to a DHS, it redelegated something it could not, it had no power to hand to anybody. So what am I looking for from my perspective? Was I correct in throwing in a reformation relief in an equity case relative to a breach of separation, a breach of established government, organic of government, and the violation of the power of the legislature? This case says that was proper. Whether again, we look at their Misery code is not relevant to the Tennessee, but this is all the same, folks. You just can't think of it in any other way. So I'm without researching the Misery code, I'm clear that what's going on, what I've been telling you, what is already in the courts, a corrupt, beyond corrupt court system in Tennessee, actually. I still wonder what the question is. No one pointed out what the problem was, and yet it hasn't gone forthwith. Another demand in equity. You understand, if when we didn't get an answer within a few days, even maybe as far out as 14, maybe, as I told David Tula, I said, you got a problem here. This court is no good. And we tested that, and we got our answer back, that it is corrupt. It's not just my opinion. This Missouri case backs up the one in the relief, the reformation of a rule that we claimed that rule was wrong and it violated the rule itself, the promulgation of the rule violated and breached the separation of powers because it extended to a foreigner what the legislature stated had to happen locally, official relative to the due process before they can do anything and not on a grand scale. They also talk about the general application. It's like a general warrant of power. They don't have it. You want to learn a little bit about the civics that he says a middle school kid should know? What I think we've lost even as a society? Go read this case and watch how this works. You really got to keep track of how this guy goes through this. What errors he's made, I don't know. I've kind of, because it came so quick, I haven't researched for the errors in their law because I don't have that kind of time. Maybe someone in Misery can go through it for themselves and for me. And we can maybe look and see, maybe there's a weakness. I do see two weaknesses, though. When you see him talking about DHS rules were given to them to do and execute and give the black and white as an instruction to the officials, as dictated and mandated by the legislature, he does say Misery does allow for the local body, not one bureaucrat, but a bunch of elected bureaucrats, essentially, because you're counties are also executive, they're quasi-legislative judicial, if you understand how this works at the county level. Just what I'm dealing with in my criminal complaint as well, I've got to show them they have an authority here. It's in different layers, different things that are going on, that they are given by this judge the power to decide en masse. My problem with that is that's not the law either. They don't have that power unless they do what? They give notice that someone as an infectious or communicable disease that they've identified the infectious agent. So where I'm totally almost cheerleader about just reading this about the bureaucracy and that you don't give a bureaucrat any leeway and they have none to take. I did not agree that the elected officials, because of that election, that status gave them more power to be the one body, the single bureaucrat by many to do the same violations. Because he then starts talking about having statewide authority where his argument is, well, you can't, it's improper to do in one county what you don't do in another. That's telegraphing that they're going to move this up to the governor. And that is the other problem. Just go back to the Tennessee case I've talked about, which is online. And darn it, I keep forgetting the TN traffic ticket. I think it's .us. TN traffic ticket. If .us is not proper, put .com. But TN traffic ticket, go find the complaint, go read it. You'll see we've said all this. the little nobody understands Reformation, but it sits there as a relief in equity. There's all kinds of stuff in equity when you understand what's available. And that was sitting there to speak just to this case. And that's all this judge talks about, was the regulation and delegation of authority side that was contrary to the organic establishment, breaches the separation of powers. If you didn't understand that basic civics from a middle school student was enough to defeat these people, I'm encouraged. One judge. I don't know where this is going to go. I don't know if their system is more corrupt than Tennessee. I have no clue. But this is where you start seeing the answers. I guess another thing I noticed. He actually, because I was wondering, are these getting closed house? Are they really that close to the state? Well, no, we really are federalized. This guy generously goes around the country looking at recent discussions, extracting, like from the Philadelphia case, what other judges have said that looked reasonable about this point. And he brings them into his case. And so I don't like doing that, but if this is what we need to do to bring embarrassment on a jurisdiction where other jurisdictions are finding the law and one is reticent to do so, maybe we can go ahead and just, well, did you see over there and did you see over there and did you see over there? And that is our problem here. That's not happening and not happening forthwith, which is the main contention in any equity case. And so I've said a ton of stuff here. This Missouri case is very cool, very important. You got to think about how it's set up. All this stuff that's written that this state talks about, this judge talks about, is in my, I know, boy, what should I say this? It's in my mind as I'm thinking through what do people do, is what we might do, how we might address it, where the Achilles heels might be. So when I, again, talk behind the woodshed, I'm not telling you just, a drop in the ocean relative to what might need to be known, but I'm available. With a particular problem, we look at that, and then the ocean becomes a thimble. And how many thimbles we might need, I'll never know. In this case, the thimble actually didn't need to be so big. What had happened is that you handed it off someone you trusted and had confidence to do justice, and they dropped it. The problem is, when it hit the ground, it still sits right there. It's spilt out of the thimble you handed, and now you show that they mishandled it. They mishandled a precious, if you will. And I don't mean that in the movie sense. This is the structure of government that keeps check on these bureaucrats, bureaucrats, oppressors, tyrants, and why I'm confused, why the people of the United States, at least, the United States of America, have not risen up in that power. What I talked about last week, force versus power. Do you know you have the power? Or are you going to go ahead and not know that and accept the force because they don't, the other side using it doesn't have it, and it's self-evident they don't have power when they use force? I'm really excited about this at some level. I want to talk more. I think it's more important that I have just introduced it. There's another tab here I got for you. You can read. It actually offers you the lawsuit response. You can read it for yourself, and that's important to read through. I could go through all the things that are quoted in the story. I could go through reading even special parts inside the case. I don't know that I want to do that. I'm not sure what efficacy it is if you haven't seen it, if you shrug your shoulders either as well, or even, again, what I say is not the end-all be-all of an observation, although I think I bring a high caliber of integrity to an analysis, if you will, the interpretation. It doesn't mean it's the only one, and that's why I get, the chairman of the mining district, he has just got oodles of years of law reading as well, and lawsuits that he's had to go through and things like that. We get to fight, if I say we have to battle each other over these concepts. Opinion about, or the analogy of iron sharpening iron. You bring two, strong, sharp, sharp things together, you're going to make yourself sharper, stronger, more adept, more able. And so that's what people need to do, not just go off on their opinions and assumptions. Go right down to the black and white and start applying it. It's kind of difficult. Like I said, I've been learning now relative to, official misconduct. Again, it sounds like nothing, but I'm finding out it became such a big deal, I've now integrated it in on top of what I had before into our criminal complaint. So Missouri has a judgment here. You go through and read it. I think it's fascinating. There's a whole object here also where it states that the law dictates what the official has to do before the official can act. This is the main obfuscation in the Tennessee case. They're claiming they have discretion before they have demonstrated the non-fraudulent exigency. And so I'm suggesting that that case be focused right in on that, because this is not a legislative mandate. This is what the law requires already for things of a police power prerogative. It's not the legislature that said that they had to do to demonstrate the exigency. The law reflected that in court cases, but it's the subject matter of prerogative power, police power, that requires in this tripartite organic establishment that the executive declare objectively what the particular emergency is. Then the legislature took that requirement and statutorialized it, if I can say that word. Statutorialized, is that cool? Okay, and you see, this is the due process that's provided, where they say they have to come from a thing, not their idea, not a guess, not a by golly, not a presumption, presumptively COVID. No, an objective basis, in which we understand there is no test. It's written down, but they not because that was derived from those statements, and just look and see. There is no, and the technology won't support it, and the statements and the officials support that there is no ability to identify this one, and we understand that because it's novel. In other words, they're lying to you. There is a way to identify what they're claiming is a biological agent, but it's not a biological agent, is it? It's a synthetic, made-up thing in a lab that anybody can make once you have the recipe, and you can test for what you made. But it's man-made. It's not biological. It's a chemical weapon. And they can't admit to that. So there's a lie that they can't test, but the test is not the PCR. The test is that it's novel and made up from the lab. And that's not biological. So there's nothing infectious actually going on except for their war against you, their attack against people, and it's identified in the failure to be strictly liable to the law and the judiciary that's allowing that, except for this one judge right now in misery. Maybe a little less miserious. Maybe just a little bit less. So we take the facts of this, we bring it together. He's talking about the regulation side. I'm saying that that case still fell short. They didn't say that it was a fraud up front. They didn't say that there had been a failure of the, as a matter of law, whoever the official had the obligation under the police power requirement, not the legislative requirement, which may be there as well in statute, but that when you're dealing in a police power prerogative, there is required the demonstration. That's a duty. That's what you attack. That the failure of that duty, not the DHSS, that comes later, but first is the first step. And so I've got a little hesitation on this as well, but I'm excited to see. We're finally seeing the words from a judge that most people would say is authority, I guess. And he may very well be. He's really written up an interesting, directly focused thing on the regulation side, which is not quite enough, but that's okay. I'll take the reformation relief demanded in the Tennessee case that I can now know it was proper to apply and may not have gone enough had we had more time to put that together. And I say that, again, it was a doorstop. It was a keep-the-door-open measure so that they couldn't moot the case. But the doorstop opens the door to all this discussion right here. And I guess the point here, I'm trying to show you, those of you thinking forward, thinking ahead, when you really start to see what these tools, we call these remedies, for relief might do. There's a lot that they can do. Whether or not you get and enjoy that, I don't know. We're not seeing that in the Tennessee case. And I still think all these months and almost 2 years, it's the definitive challenge. And it's supported by this case today, I guess I can say, even though it doesn't attack, the plaintiffs didn't attack the fraud. They agree that COVID's a thing and around. And that's how you can tell that they didn't. The plaintiffs win point after point, but they didn't challenge the infectious agent had not been identified. And moving on to about that, and the remedy, see, the DHS, even if the DHS, the problem with this case, the DHS may have stayed within the law, they say that the Missouri Code allows fines and penalties to the commissioners of the county or the boards that are elected officials to make the very same clubbings of the people that the agency doesn't have is my problem. Why you have to hit the fraud of it? The county hasn't done it. But we find out that when you go down the wrong path and you haven't identified the right and correct thing, the right infectious agent, you can, just without any external pressure, can cause mistakes. Now let's put in the profit, harm a profit focus. The Fauci, the fraud she, since 1984, imposition on the world now, that he's been trying to make a name for himself through this, the manufactured fraud. We find an attorney who's suing now relative to the improper thing being done and the lies that are going on to cover it up. The attorney releases first pages from subpoenaed FDA file, shows Pfizer documented 158,893 adverse events. 158,893 adverse events with 25,957 nervous system disorders in first few months of distribution. I'm not sure, but this is the case. I think they said that they weren't going to release. They didn't want to release for 76 years. I'm not sure if this is the case, but it might be. But they did release. They started the release. The attorney put it on the website. I have that link for you. A story about it. Oh, and thank you to the RLM chat last week, dumping it in well in the night after the broadcast. That's where I captured it, so thank you for that. We get to go now see what this report is that was marked confidential. And you can just type in any kind of words that you want to go find. You would think that after one or two dying would be enough, but no, they're going to keep pressing. And the phrase, the magic phrase seems to be in all this, over and over and over and overstated. The list of special interest harms is 4 pages long. Astonishing. When I got this at the end of the document, so what's going on? 4 pages of special interest harms. That didn't include all the normal harms that these things are causing in people. Well, I read this little list, and I want to call your attention back to last week when I was reading the article saying, is this an Onion article? Is this a Babylonian Bee article? Of course we can tell these symptoms are the cause of the chemical weapon they're calling a vaccine. This list here, nervous system disorders, musculoskeletal and connective tissue disorders, gastrointestinal disorders, skin and subcutaneous tissue disorders, respiratory, thoracic, and mediastinal disorders, infectious and infestations, injury, infestations, folks, of what? Injury, poisoning, and procedural complications and investigations. When you get into like the respiratory thing, you realize that they're talking about the list of that the hospitals are reported to now being increasingly seeing, and no COVID. It's these things. On top of 4 pages of tightly spaced, there's no space after every semicolon, they jammed it in, 4 pages of special interest harms and injuries. And there's fatalities, and there's charts. And I don't know if I should go through and read all that. I think maybe you can read. I just won't waste any time. It's on and on and on. What these chemical weapons do and plan to be done and then given authorization to do. From a confidential discovery return from an attorney. Thank you very much, Mr. Attorney. What's his name? Aaron Siri. Has a history of representing people for vaccination injury for quite a while. He recently told a U.S. panel discussion led by Senator Ron Johnson that during the COVID crisis, their phones have received an avalanche of requests. Aaron added, quote, if we actually sued all the pharmaceutical companies for all the complaints, it would actually be impossible for all the attorneys around the country, around 100, to handle all those matters. Like apparently, there's only 100 vaccine injury. And then we find out they're not really vaccines, is it? And so, wow, that was interesting. He could sue these companies. How is that when we hear that they're immune? Maybe I should move on from there. This is a link to a story. You can read what he says. he tells his being a lawyer is not an opinion that's a so-called expert, knowledgeable in certain fields, which you can derive from this document. There's plenty more. From that, it doesn't take somebody who's specialized to see the problem, and he documents some of that for us. If we didn't know more, he refers us, let's say, to page 6. Due to the large numbers of spontaneous adverse event reports received for the product, Pfizer has prioritized the processing for serious cases, and that Pfizer has also taken multiple actions to help alleviate the large increase in adverse events. And I didn't get to the interesting statement. Can I find it in every one of these where there's a harm? They claim that all these harms, and I have to do it paraphrased, because no, here it is, conclusion. There were no, all these harms, all these adverse events, they claim in every one of these, their conclusion, there on each section, there were no safety signals that emerged from the review of these cases of use in pregnancy and while breastfeeding. There are no new signals emerged. That was one of them. So they didn't even test for that, right? Summary of the coding conventions for onset of vaccine preventable disease versus the vaccine date, apparently more important than all these things that they're talking about that give rise to harms. They never tested pregnant women, apparently. And yet now they're giving it to your little kids. The other precious statement here. Conclusion. The cumulative case review does not raise new safety issues. Surveillance will continue. And you're looking at hundreds of people being adversely affected in just one little section here. Fascinating admissions here in confidential paper gotten from an attorney doing discovery. And coming how late, folks? How late has this been coming? And so I was wondering a little bit about where is we hear that they're immune. And this leads me to the term I found. It was, we kind of did this backwards. I ran into the term and I said, well, I wonder if this is applied across the board for exceptions to immunity. And boy, sure enough, this term does come up. This thing called official misconduct. This is akin to alleging the fraud. You're not going to, fraud should vitiate everything you do. You can't, when you commit fraud, you shouldn't be able to prosper or exploit it and run away. Equity is supposed to do justice and arrest that. That doesn't happen in Tennessee, but that didn't even happen like in Missouri, although it looked like the circuit court judge used equity powers because he says the plaintiff asked for whatever other relief the court could give. That's an equity statement. So even though it's in a circuit court, they may have combined courts, unlike the Tennessee Chancery Courts in special sessions, I think it is over there. And so he puts on he's got his equity hat on, and he's requested by the plaintiff to do whatever the court can do to do what it can do, and it does. You'll see that too. Read right in there for that. But so there's things the courts can step in to do. Arresting fraud, not giving it any air, is important. It's supposed to be done if justice is intended. And so the statement is when it didn't happen forthwith, justice wasn't intended by the judiciary. Figure that one out for all of you that don't like your judiciary and wonder what's wrong. But moving on, I wanted to know, where was this immunity? It doesn't exist in this court case, apparently. So I go back to the PREP, a PREP Act, and I just quickly dove in with the COVID-19 and PREP Act. And wanted to find out about immunity. So that's what popped up. It was written back in August of 2020. And so I wanted to go down. I don't want to read too much. You can see this yourself. And there is an exception. Limitations. That's where it was. Go down and roll down and look at this, folks. And this is the exceptions I look for. This is like the savings clauses for liability. But you can't get away with wrongdoing. And you'll look for it. And it's not because you say it's wrong. You have to go find the standard by which it would be applied. It's a couple of steps before this happens, before you can declare C wrongdoing. But here is the term that called my attention and qualified what I was saying. It's almost across the board. Immunity from liability under the PREP Act, which was made to immunize everybody who touches this thing, is not available for death or serious physical injury caused by willful misconduct. So I misspoke. It's not official misconduct. It's willful misconduct. So edit the tape before. Willful misconduct. It goes on to say in this article, a quote, serious physical injury, close quote, is one of the, that is life-threatening or results in or requires medical or surgical intervention to preclude permanent impairment of the body function or results in permanent damage to a body structure. Willful misconduct is misconduct that is greater than any form of recklessness or negligence. And this confirmed what my prior studies were just this week about our criminal complaint, says it just like that elsewhere. And it starts to define what's going on. It's above negligence. I hadn't appreciated that. For those of you that think, oh, I know so much or whatever, you don't think I don't know or whatever. I didn't understand. I equated they were equal to me. I find out it's not the case. It's above recklessness and above negligence. Willful misconduct. It is defined in the PREP Act as an act or failure to act that is taken, one, intentionally to achieve a wrongful purpose, two, knowingly without legal or factual justification, and three, in disregard of a known or obvious risk that is so great as to make it highly probable that the harm will outweigh the benefit. All three of these conditions must be proven with clear and convincing evidence. That's a legal standard. You got to go find out how to do that. And what that is, willful misconduct cannot be found against a manufacturer or distributor for the actions regulated by the HHS. It goes on and on. They say that, but that would negate the application. So when you find these people in a fraud, is that beyond willful misconduct? When you find that you can attach the willful misconduct to them and they're in fraud, and you show the motive was for simply for profit, and that to any one, not general warrant, but any one, there was no benefit, do you think maybe you can start pushing on that? You think you could invalidate that there was an immunity strong enough to allow fraud to move on? Again, you'd have to match each one of these elements. The action taken regularly by the HHS under the Public Health Service Act and the Food and Drug Cosmetic Act, if HHS chooses not to take an enforcement action against the manufacturer or distributor, or if HHS terminates or settles the enforcement action without imposing a criminal, civil, or administrative penalty, or a program planner or qualified person who acts in accordance with applicable directions, guidelines, or recommendations issued by HHS regarding administration and use of countermeasures, as long as HHS or the state or local health authority is notified about the serious injury or death within 7 days of its discovery. Do you think if all of y'all were all telling them beforehand that this was a crime on the movement, that you would circumvent everything that was supposed to be an exception here? That we're not just dealing in the willful misconduct, which is higher than negligence. They're committing something higher than negligence and recklessness. They're actually committing, again, the fraud. And that Congress and legislature did not have the authority to give to an administrative agency the ability to do fraud and get away with it. Equity should not be okay with it. And if equity in a court of equity is okay with it, then you're not in a court of equity. Pretty simple. That's a different problem, though. But you, not your opinions, you develop that. You develop and show. And then you just have to hope that there's more people that are just sick and fed up enough to do something about all this nonsense against us. So they give us the guideline, they say that it's not applicable, and I'm saying willful misconduct is a thing higher than negligence. I've incorporated that where there's no immunity. Then I'm looking at here and I'm saying, wait a minute, that takes away the need for the definition. And they're not talking about fraud here. Okay, it's not part of it, so it must be applicable. Maybe that's what the attorney's using to go after the Pfizer on their information and get a discovery, which means the case is filed and moving. And so I just wanted to show, I guess, willful misconduct is very important to understand. Get it locked down. Get the elements. They define it on the PREP Act. It's got another definition. I think it is in... generally, which you might be able to rely on, not specific to these vaccines, which you might be able to use otherwise. For me, this was important because I was looking for what is willful misconduct in a particular state. Found out the state doesn't even actually define it. Talk about those terms you're looking for definitions for. They don't define this, actually. No, they refer to other states. which shows you like the federalization of our country. Everyone's looking at other states for information, which is kind of an interesting view to me. Because you're always told when you look at this stuff long enough that each state may have a different way that it treats it. And so that's another problem that you have to discern whether or not a state treats certain things differently than others, but lawfully within the state, within their own laws. Here in this case, apparently, there's a bunch of states that don't have their own definition, like we see defined in the PREP Act. For the PREP Act, you wouldn't take that necessarily and apply it anywhere else, but I found another one that I was searching for before I reached out to look at whether or not this attorney might be suing me, despite the PREP Act, was this statement about what is willful misconduct. So what we're looking at is when you're looking at someone harming you, and like I, for my, our criminal complaint that I'm writing on the mining, for the mining claim, and what they're doing, and the Forest Service doing to the sheriff, I now add willful misconduct. Did I have these three points and elements? We call them elements. It's like I tell you, you have to have the elements that constitute the term. And so I readily had these, and so I just was able to drop in the term wherever it was needed. Willful misconduct is defined to be three essential elements must be present to raise a negligent act to the level of willful misconduct. So here it is again. Willful misconduct isn't equal to negligence. My error, if you didn't have that error, great, I didn't know that for me. So now I'm educated better. Negligent act to the level of willful misconduct, and the elements are: one, actual or constructive knowledge of the peril to be apprehended; two, actual or constructive knowledge that injury is probable as opposed to a possible result of the danger; and three, conscious failure to act to avoid the peril. You have to state acts and facts that qualify those three elements. Well, my first thing when I wrote, just to show you how this started worked out, I went right to go find the duty on a federal employees or officers. And I quickly found, not the law, but a rule implementing a law that says what's the duties upon the employees. It kind of put a smile on my face because I found it pretty quick. I kind of knew where it was, but it was there, and it was what I thought. And guess what it does? It statutorily, even by rule, imputes is the better word, the knowledge of the law. The knowledge of what's going on, the knowledge of these property, the knowledge of all this stuff. I said, number one's done. And the active constructive knowledge of the peril to be apprehended, that you don't violate the law and you recognize as a federal officer employee the state law. And for us, the state law said we can do what we're doing, and that's a private property concern, not a federal property concern. We got them there. And I'm not going to say on and on about how we did this. I'm just saying I went to the black and white, found the duty, imputes the knowledge to them, to the employee or the official, and I said, there, now I've got them in knowledge. Because I'm dealing on a criminal complaint. I've got to get them in now malice or whatever. This is when you see willful misconduct, you see these are the elements as well of how recklessness and negligence happens and breach to what they should have been known. And this is beyond even their training. Again, every citizen is supposed to know the laws and enforce them. You're not supposed to walk around in a costume thinking that gave you license to go to give you immunity. And so this was very instructive to me, finding out these three elements. We have actual constructive knowledge that the injury is probable. You can't breach a gate and not think that you're going to be doing some problem when you have the right to do that. You can't be committing fraud and not know that you're committing the fraud. This is outside the training. I got them outside the scope of their duty. And the conscious failure to act to avoid peril. I found another statute that when they witness a crime, they have to report it. When they witness a wrongful thing, they have to report it. That's a duty that these employees have. So now I've got the elements for willful misconduct already built into my document. I was looking for them originally. I just didn't happen to know. I can easily, Vince, put this in my document. Just drop it in. Boom. Because I've got the elements already throughout the document in multiple areas, multiple stated in multiple ways on different things that were violated. The point here, I'm going through all this, is to show you there's standards to meet. They're written. They're defined. This is a definition, if you will. This is like a dictionary term for the term willful misconduct. It's not even out of the state I'm looking at, but the state I'm looking at actually referred to this state, not this case, but the state that uses this case. It's not even the same state. And yes, I know, you throw your hands up, how much is too much work, I don't want to do it. Well, this is why they've got us where they've got us. At some point, we shouldn't have not known this. This should have been the stuff we learned in school. And we didn't. And I'm just, I don't even know how to describe myself. I'm just maybe stubborn enough, hard-headed enough. Really, I gave it all up enough. I got nothing to lose here now. I've given it all. I've got nothing to lose. Thank you, Janice. Now I can focus on the stuff because they got nothing to take, do they? And the thing that they can take, I can now defend because that's all I'm focused on. And then I go find out where they were in charge, imputed with the knowledge, so I have one element of crime. All I got to do is show that they intended to do it and harm me. And that's easy to through the other parts of the laws. When I get to the contract that we call the grant, and that this is a trust breach by the official, I now get them. Their acts become prejudicial to the government. Guess what? Acts prejudicial to the United States government is another crime. And I'll tell you, they don't even know what I'm talking about. I guarantee you, these folks don't even know what's there and what I'm talking about when we get into trust law. They think the mining law is something, oh, it's just a law. You go to go do your regulations and file your plan of operations. Didn't look to see that plan of operations is filed by the agency and not on a private inholding. And it's a trust breach against the beneficiary, the obligation of the government, to protect, not a commerce authority to regulate. If you understand this, and our right to that property is a right of ingress and egress, not a right to travel. We have a right to go do the highest and best use as granted by Congress, any interference of which is prejudicial to the government. And I want you, all your folks, to listen to what I'm saying about how you position yourself. I'm not talking about all the regulable stuff. I come from the land. I show the title to the land against all comers. And I say, here's your obligation as a trust, your trusteeship, that you have to protect this. You can't beat on me. To beat on me would be what? Violating the separation and breaching the separation of power. It's really that fast, but you have to read enough to find it. I didn't come instantly to me, folks, I can just tell you. All these cases are all the same to me. I'm looking and qualifying, did I learn, am I teaching myself correctly? Am I applying it correctly? The misery case, perfect. It hit right on the Reformation, the one relief we requested. Not all of it, because we're hitting actually that they didn't, as a matter of law, demonstrate the non-fraudulent exigency. First, before they got into discretion, before they got to anything administrative. And that's as a matter of law, not by some court case decision, although the court cases acknowledge the obligation and duty on the official where police power concerns are attempted to be invoked. So, willful misconduct was a little bit of a lesson for me. I had already written the complaint in our complaint for these elements. I just was able to drop it in as a term. Why is that important? Because now I'm looking at a criminal charge, I'm looking at a defect in the employee, and I've got all the elements that show that this is not just a little civil matter. All right, so this is a building of a case. You have to build it element by element, and it has to be right, or you go nowhere, you have nothing, and I'll just tell you, the judges and the administrators, they all look, they have attorneys looking in. Oh, they know when you made it and when you didn't. And so now I know better about this. I didn't know that these elements I put together were actually willful misconduct, and willful misconduct can never be used as a defense, can never provide cover. It can never be used as an immunity once you have the elements there. And wouldn't you think, if you know the law, and you know it's going to be harmful if you don't follow the law, and you consciously not follow the law, and someone is hurt, that's just a common law claim, isn't it? Well, dealing in property, we're actually dealing in the title to property and the pertinent rights to it. That's equity. And they have to come with their better title. And an employee that's sitting in misconduct, willful misconduct, has nothing. Nothing. And so, Do I get them out of the scope of their duty? Absolutely, because their employer told them, don't do this. Don't go down this path. Did they make that easy for me to find? No. Didn't make it easy to find, but I've been reading enough to go find it. And all the reading I've done, it didn't occur to me. And I've seen willful misconduct. Never really put it together that it was a bigger deal. And that it's core in how to eliminate. It's like a fraud. It's core to eliminating an immunity. Anyway, I hope I've said enough on that. Even if it's like, okay, get on with the point. I mean, I was listening to myself a couple times in the last week. So I go, get on to the point. But I'm repeating stuff for you because it's so important where we're failing and how we shouldn't be failing. And it's not that hard to really do it more correctly. It's focusing in on what your opinion might be. You might think that you have, let's say, negligence. Go find out what your state defines negligence to be in the subject matter. And make sure, not your opinion, but make sure the facts can be listed to comport to those elements that make up the word that you use. Because the word, the term, is essentially the conviction of the act, in this case, for a wrong. Whether that's criminal, wrongfully criminal, it's wrongfully being criminal, or a breach of official duty, which to me is a different, I know it sounds like it's the same, but the breach of official duty relative to the trust, let's say. It's a trust breach. And when we're looking at these, when I'm looking at these things, as I'm parsing through all this, as I was talking to you early, looking to do these, are we hitting all the right notes? That's what my mind is going through. Are we on these different categories? I tell you, potentials and categories and the elements of a major themes of a wrong that you're addressing. Have you hit those elements? Those are always playing in my mind while I'm working on these things. So it's not something you can haphazardly approach when your country is on the line, when your rights, your property is destroyed, and there's somebody that doesn't have any title or right to it claiming it, and you say nothing. It's no different than in a way an adverse possession of property. And if they hold that long enough, they end up getting that property. That means you. That means you and your rights. See, everyone leads with their rights. What I think you need to do is actually, in equity, you lead with your property. Or you lead with the breach to the property. And as I tell you, the collateral attacks on so-called driving or traffic is to assert a pertinent right of a patent, if you have one, or the as a renter through your contract, which they can't breach that contract, to the right of ingress and egress to that property and from that property, right? To and from ingress and egress. Anyway, so that's but you have to think about that more before you start just thinking that silver bullets work here. They don't in the face of a criminal that's in a robe. They don't in the face of someone who's in a suit that's a friend, a membership of the criminal in a robe. They don't that in a sheriff that looks to the criminal in a suit that's a friend and a membership of the robe that is a sheriff that looks to them for advice. Yet this is where our country is right now. And I can say that with confidence, folks, as arrogant as this sounds, with confidence, because nobody in this country in COVID is still asking, where is it? Where is the infectious agent? Where? Demonstrate it. Where? Nobody does it. Nobody has done, well, I can't say nobody. I'd love to have the Tennessee case before the Missouri judge. I can tell you that. Love to see it. I'd just love to see if he would go there. Because he didn't go there. But he went almost there. He went enough to call all the acts in Missouri unconstitutional. And I didn't get to the punchline there for that. Got too excited on where they went because it brings up the, as he said, the middle school kid knows civics, knows that what's going on is a violation of the organic establishment, which we call the Republican form of government. And there are checks and balances. And somehow, nobody knows that any exist. Well, except for the guy behind the woodshed and a couple of other people, maybe. And we're kind of fumbling in the dark a bit against the tyranny. But we're not really fumbling. See, this is the other thing. Knowing the narrow path, as I said, maybe these cases that are slowly all coming out elsewhere just shine the light of shame upon a state judiciary we'll see. I don't know what the force to bring justice is that actually causes that to trigger. I do know a lot of people pushing on it would cause it to happen a lot quicker. Because we don't do that, and things like this happen. Nurses and hospital officials, treatment of kids injured in Waukesha car accident being hampered by vaccine mandate. As I said, they would use this against your care. Not only are they going to pressure you as a mother or father to get your little ones to be vaccinated and you, they are sadistic and criminal enough to deprive and interfere with your kids' care when they need it in an emergency. As you're hearing everywhere, as you saw coming in, people with ongoing chronic illnesses, they were shoved to the side. This is horrible care. As the one nurse said 2 weeks ago, again, I didn't even get to that, the theme of all this, the motto of this, when you should see this at night, regarding the news and the pharmaceutical, this is horrible care. This Waukesha car attack, I'm not going to get into all that. Somebody running down some parade music makers and some other people, 18 kids. Well, because now it becomes an issue, they don't have a vaccine. Not one of them have been determined to be the infectious principal, is it? And so you see the failure right there. And no one runs to the court to point that out at an equity court to say they don't have the right to stop it because they don't have the official determination that my son or daughter is an infectious principal to withhold care and discriminate. As we heard before, when you travel there is in commerce. Dr. Issues Dire warning to the vaccinated, you are now patented property. Someone coming on as a doctor showing that their belief, as I was telling you before, just a confirmation in a way of the observation, these are not natural things. These are fabricated, patented property possessed by private individuals, and the corruption of your blood is what is going to be the property that they may be able to lay claim, though I don't think we're going to hear it quite yet. Someone else pops up with the very same view, and they do use that Myriad LLC case. They do seem to use it in a more proper aspect of identifying that when you do have a patented thing, that it's not natural, that it's property owned by someone who has a right to that property. And in patent law, it's an exclusive right. Remember, patent law is patent of the land, same thing, exclusive right. Only patents are written in their documents, not for the 17 years or whatever it is now, they keep changing, maybe 25. It's forever on land. That's the Republic organization of things. Settle everything, settle it for best, highest, and best use. So this is important. This Myriad case is brought up. This doctor is saying because it's property, it is owned by someone, they can lay claim to it. So this is more correct than the other one I told you was not correct, jumping to the end result without going through the steps about how that could happen. And this is, I say this to keep people focused, get real focused on the lineage, the chronologies, the hierarchies, keep them in order so that you, and your authorities with those so that you don't make mistakes. And if you don't, as I told you before, if you have a links and chain elements that you have to have, those are the links. If you're missing a link, don't jump. Don't say you're connected, that you're connected and have them. If you're missing a link in your chain, if you're going to rappel over the end, you're going to go to the bottom and you're not going to get a remedy. Make sure your links, your elements are all there and their authorities are sound. Sounding, that's admiralty, right? Well, forget all that. Just move in with the right elements. Link your chain of connection and as a leash to them and their duty. And then you're going to have more sound things. This story talks about these things are novel. The Myriad case says that it's private property. It defines what's not private property. It says if it is, it's property owned by someone. And these novel so-called viruses, these novel chemicals that create proteins are property owned by someone, and if they're in you, they can be claimed. Just like I was telling you would happen, I don't know how long ago. So, the ideas are coming, folks. It's finally going to dawn on people, and I'm just in a way hoping it's really not too late. Maybe there's not a too late. People can always rise up, but it becomes harder and harder for those people to rise up when they are dumbed down and the population is being adversely affected in their brain and their functioning. And you see, when you go back into that Pfizer documents the attorney have, you'll see how it goes and affects your nervous system. They're after how you function. They're after how you will not function, actually. You're not going to be capable to defend yourself at some point. And if it's as transmissible on the chemical weapon side, like I told you, bee venom was able to cause anaphylactic shock in the wife of the beekeeper, that is the problem for those of us that know better. We still might have a problem. That's why we go on to what might help us as a prophylactic. And as we were talking earlier, I don't know if I'm going to get there. I've been finding some interest. I was looking at it for a different reason. I had a different problem pop up a few months ago. It's turning out, it looks like enzymes are going to be very important. Bromelain, papain, serratio, peptidase. Anyway, it's the, it slipped my mind. The serapeptase is what it's shortened down to for products. But anyway, so those enzymes are basic in their function about our bodies. They're serious medicine, if you will. If you don't want to not pay attention to what these things. This is coming from pineapples. This is the enzymes coming from papaya, and stomach enzyme from a silkworm. They work in your body in very interesting ways, and they work at a very systemic, basic level. But they may be something we have to look at. The point is that we have to be fortified. We can overdo it with them, so be careful. I'm not saying do anything. Really study this stuff. But there may be stuff to help us to resist this potential. As I said, the bee attack, the bee model, the bee venom model of attack that we can't necessarily stop. If we have enough exposure to these things, it could take people down. Anaphylaxis was one of the major risk factors in that attorney's documentation as well. That thrombotic condition, gobs and gobs of thrombotic conditions, all known before we got here about this. Just as we've been talking, again, I've been mentioning it behind the woodshed, it's not really new. It's that you get to see the black and white in a confidential document that the company knew, and they did it anyway, and they disregarded the risk. You see all the misconduct. You see the law written to write them out, and I'm saying that whole thing was fraud, that the legislature didn't have that power. And this is how you attack that. Because when you can take away that it had any good use, notwithstanding what fraud she says, and the thing that Rand Paul will not attack, you get rid of the whole thing as well. You think that's going to go down in the first case? I kind of doubt it, but we have a whole bunch of people pointing that out. That either is going to disappear, or you're going to get someone pushed through that. You're going to find a judge like this one judge in Missouri. Whether, again, he's a circuit court judge, it may be changing as they go on, but there's at least a mentality in a judge somewhere that says, you know, this organized establishment was something, and it's something we needed to keep, and I'm here to do that. And so, from my bench, I'm going to decide that's the case. And to the limit where he didn't actually push over to where he should have, exposing it was a fraud to begin with, okay, we'll take what we can get. We'll take that much terrain. That must mean that judge exists. Some other judges are out there. You don't know where you're going to run across these judges, notwithstanding the pervasiveness of the bar oppression and occupation in our lives. Also, we were wondering, where's the information about the negativisms, notwithstanding the censorship, the third party out censorship? I have a little tweet here that says they aren't going to publish their findings. They are concerned about losing research money. Again, just what I told you, when everyone's on the dole, no one's going to jeopardize how they know where their money comes. They know where their bread comes from. Dr. Asim Malhotra reveals a cardiology researcher found similar results to a new report showing an increase in risk of heart attack following the mRNA COVID vaccine. So this is the self-censorship of people, researchers, who don't want to lose, don't want to speak up and lose their money. My thing, I look at this and say, but I don't need the researcher to go. The risk is already known in the confidential documents now we can get online. At least the few that have been put on are already plenty for me. Do I need any more? I guess we're talking now to those few that are resisting a bit. Just pull this paper out and say, look, this is not, they think that this is safe, not for my blood, not the You're not going to corrupt my blood. And the Constitution prohibits the corruption of blood. If you didn't get that connotation, and I'm relating to the Constitution, I'm relating to the penalties that could be put on there that are prohibited, and also, as, again, Clint Richardson, interesting, the title of one of his presentations was Corruption of Blood. Exactly what's going on. I find it interesting. It ties to the Constitution, the prohibition. Why no one else has recognized that, I don't know. New York ER closes as employees refuse to comply with vaccine mandate. And I'm going, yeah, this is what I said. Everybody who doesn't want to do the vaccine and doesn't want to be pressured, don't take it. You need to redo your life and walk away. And guess what happens? The ER closes. The business closes. Nurses and officials at the Children's Hospital where all the kids injured in the horrific Waukesha car attack were taken have revealed that treatment is being hampered by staff shortage brought on by the COVID vaccine mandate. How stupid does this get for us, folks, before we respond? Now your little ones are being affected because there's nobody to treat them. I told you, eventually these places close. All these businesses close. This utopia that's been brought on by this was totally a violation. As you'll read in the Missouri case, the judge goes into the general effect, it can't be anything good. And that he was there to be able to prohibit that. And he does. I just sit here quiet. I'm looking at I can't believe I'm actually reading this stuff. It's predictable. You have ability. The power is in the people. The people, the few that are left, just saying, I'm not doing that, and walking out. And guess what? They're so stupid or so set up in an agenda that they allowed their place to close. And yet nobody anywhere, nobody, has said, wait a minute, that wasn't even supposed to be applied. Mount Sinai Long Beach Hospital fired 72 healthcare the staff due to vaccine mandate and then closed down due to staff shortage. Is your austerity future? You aren't getting your care. Now, those 72 should maybe have made another provision in private care, you know, where membership or whatever. Maybe take cash. And they walk out, they close your care. It's horrible care, folks. It's like that nurse 2 weeks ago in that story, if any of you that read that she said that, it was one of the things she mentioned in the report from Ventura. This is horrible care. Yes, it was planned to be horrible care. And there's not going to be any care. That's how horrible it's going to be. And there's not going to be a good reason for any of it. And the Missouri judge points this out, that this is not a thing that's supposed to happen in a government that has this tripartite existence where bureaucrats know their place. And more importantly, the people know that too. What is the hesitation when you see this? Why wouldn't there be a hesitation? With low vaccination rates, Africa's COVID deaths remain far below Europe and the USA. Do I have to say anything more? Yeah, this is a chemical weapon. The variants are various bodies' responses to this chemical attack. It throws all kinds of stuff off. The body tries to do its thing, and it starts to throw these so-called variants, which are not variants. They're just new chemistries that are being formulated and then called a variant. A variant of what? Not anything they have found objectively, not from a biological infectious agent. They're just a variant. A variant of the chemical attack because people's bodies respond in certain ways. And where does this all go? It's very interesting where this starts to go and what's coming on tap. We have the right to stop it, but we won't. We are living in a system where they'll commit suicide to get rid of the plague of the unvaccinated, the healthy people, and Wall Street's diabolical plan to financialize all nature. I predicted this as well long ago. This is the conservation theme. This is where you take assets and you make the intangible something and you monetize it. It was predicted by the fraud of 2008, the monetary scheme that took toxic debt fraud and monetize it for value. And then they insure that for more bonding value. It's all invented. That's where your invention, it's all vented out of thin air. but it's invented through fraud. Here's a story now we get very important. It's called a natural asset company. With it, the New York Stock Exchange has unveiled the most radical and potentially most destructive plan yet to take literally trillions of dollars on something that is the natural right and heritage of the entire human race, nature itself, all nature, from air, fresh water, to rainforest, to even farmland. It is being promoted as a way to incentivize the preservation of nature. Can I put another word on that? Conservation? Yeah, it's a war crime, folks. That's in my criminal complaint, too. It's non-use or the lack of the failure of best and highest use, or highest and best use. It is being promoted as a way to incentivize the preservation of nature. In fact, it is a diabolical scheme to financialize potentially trillions of dollars of nature, ultimately allowing the globalist financial elite to control even this. And the Rockefeller Foundation is a founding partner. The combination of the NYSE and the foundation ought to sound loud alarm bells. Yeah, a lot of people should be sending out that this is fraud. When you look at what they're doing, incentivizing these natural things, this has brought up the idea of David Martin. Remember, these natural investments are intangible assets. It's just the thing he promotes. These are intangible assets. This is monetizing things you don't actually have title to. It's fraud. To do this in nature and in the United States of America, it breaches the land disposal law on its face. They can't take nature. They would have to take my property and my highest and best use, where they have no right at all. For what? For something intangible like financialization and profiteering. Now, it is commerce, and it is what's promoted by Congress, but if you understand what I've been saying all this time, Congress cannot actually make a law counter to its authority to make it and breach the trusts that are involved. I say can't. They're going to, because no one understands that. Maybe I might be the only one that really understands that. Actually, when I think about it, look around. I'm looking. I look all over the place, looking for some help, looking for a new idea, looking for where I'm wrong, looking for where I might be right and need some more fortification. It's just not out there for this. This is coming on the world. The NYSE needs to be told they're partners in fraud, and they're breaching, they're prejudicing the obligations of the United States government. I just use the term, it's in law. No employee is supposed to do that. Isn't that fascinating? Why aren't we doing this? This is the whole scheme. It's all about the money, and you're not going to have any of it. They're going to take all your property. They say it's producing something. None of this, the fraud is, none of this can produce anything. Only the timbermen, the timber people, the miners, our farmers, the ranchers, the people on the ground can produce wealth. And so as long as we don't recognize that as a society, these people are going to make the future they want, and you're not going to be a part of it. You're going to be used as the human capital, human resource, the defective thing that they're now zombifying into taking your little ones into control and not give you the care, not even the good care that you'd get but a rancher would do, but justified underneath a covering of immunity that doesn't really exist either, that nobody had the right to extend to anybody. Grimner, I heard you're getting you took a little bit of down note. I hope you come back better. I hope it's just a phase. Get well, please, and I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs, or nature willing.
Another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
Oh, yeah. up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.